ACLU, the Supreme Court, has turned this down. What recourse do you have at the moment? Do you see the ACLU approaching this from another angle, or how will this go forward? I mean, stopping this is critical.
It's a little early to tell, but it's very disappointing. Our state Supreme Court is completely bought and paid for through big money politics. So we have a right-wing majority on the state Supreme Court as well, because there's a state court and a federal court remedies here. So at this point, the lawyers, a lot of money's been spent already. You have to get back together and see what the options are. It's disappointing the U.S. Supreme Court would not even give a reason or even argue the case. That's what's rather stunning. There were a lot of people who felt that this case has become much stronger. And there are some conservative jurists who have been saying that voter ID is clearly designed to disenfranchise voters and not related to any actual voter fraud.
Thank you so much
for
that.
There's a growing consensus.
Well, we're completely out of time now. My guest has been Robert Craig, of course, with Citizen Action Wisconsin. This is something that has just come up this morning. Supreme Court rejected the ACLU's lawsuit. This has been Air Cascadia 4, Monday, March 23rd, 2015. Kate Welch engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline on March 23rd at 6:30 p.m. to hear part two of Maya Shenhar speaking about her book, Locked Down, Locked Out, Why Prison Doesn't Work, and How We Can Do Better. Professor Rachel Cunliffe will also be giving commentary during part two.
Building a different world beyond prison is not just about knocking prison down, it's about raising up not only alternatives to dealing with conflict, but a world where people are cared for. If people are cared for, you're going to see a lot less harm. You're going to see a lot less violence, and you're going to see fewer survival times, too.
Again, that's March 23rd at 6:30 p.m. for part two of this conversation with Maya Shenhar.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. In May 2014, voters in Jackson County overwhelmingly approved Measure 15119, banning most GMO crops in the county. The bipartisan victory came despite a wave of opposition funding from the chemical industry, topping out at nearly $1 million. Now these same biotechnological interests are challenging the ordinance in court. This morning, we talk about the status of this lawsuit with Elise Higley, Jackson County farmer and director of Our Family Farms Coalition, the organization that spearheaded the anti-GMO ordinance last fall. Elise, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I was just recollecting, as we got you on the phone a few minutes ago, that the last time we talked back in, I guess it was early May, before the election, I mentioned something about if the ordinance passed, and you said to me, corrected me, when the ordinance passed.
Right.
And the night of election, the night of the election, as it was trouncing the opposition 2-1, I thought, you must have really known what you were talking about.
wishful thinking.
Right. I wasn't sure how much it was wishful thinking, but obviously there was some organizing going on the ground that didn't, you know, get reflected back up here. So I wanted to start by looking back at, like, why did you know that it was going to pass? What were the signs on the ground, and why didn't I know that?
You know, I don't think anyone could know. Honestly, I just, you know, to get through every day and, you know, battling the biggest chemical companies in the world, you can't really think about not winning. Otherwise, you would just, like, crawl into a hole and not come out. So I just think keeping that optimism helped us get to the end of it. And so we were all, you know, happy because we knew what this meant for us as farmers. But, you know, we didn't know until, I mean, I didn't even believe it when they announced it, so.
It won by over 66% of the vote.
Yeah.
Now, the thing, the kind of corollary to that was the following fall when we had the statewide GMO labeling initiative, which lost by 800 votes.
Right.
And I'm wondering, in your mind, what were your thoughts about why you were so successful in Jackson and also in neighboring Josephine County, which is probably one of the most conservative counties in the state. Mm-hmm. And the margin of victory wasn't quite as big, but it still was pronounced. Why do you think that your initiatives were successful last spring, but the statewide labeling initiative was not successful?
You know, I think part of it is just it's, you know, with local measures, I think it's just so much easier to be able to, you know, you're talking to your neighbors, and a statewide initiatives and federal initiatives are just, you know, a more difficult battle.
Because there was, again, a similarity in the amount of money that was spent to defeat both initiatives.
Right.
And it was
right.
A lot of the same money, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Though I don't know that PepsiCo was giving you, was funding the, no one, on 15119, but certainly Monsanto was in there giving money. And then let's talk about the big chemical company that was kind of at the center of it. Let's talk about the role that Syngenta had, both in the reason why you wanted to have a ban on GMO crops and what they did to try to defeat your initiative.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason we wanted to have the ban was to protect our farms against contamination. This is our area in Jackson County is a very desirable area to grow seeds. We have a longer, drier season. And so, you know, Syngenta knows this and knew that, and that's why they picked the spot to be growing out their sugar beet seed and breeding. So we're basically a breeding ground.
And what is that sugar beet? Just besides being sugar beet, what's the other remarkable characteristic about those seeds?
The contamination, or what do you mean?
Well, I mean the GMO seeds, because I don't know that every listener knows that the majority of sugar beets that are grown now are GMO sugar beets.
Right, right. So pretty much I think it's like, what, 90-something percent of the sugar you eat is made from GMO sugar beets. So, you know, be looking at your sources and where that comes from for sugar.
Interesting. It gets us back to the labeling, because I think that labeling, I mean, it's certainly labels are not required right now for GMOs, which was what the initiative last fall was trying to change. But the other thing is when the ingredients say sugar, do they have to say sugar beets?
They don't have to.
And
no.
It's kind of like canola, which is another place where if I see canola on a label,
right,
I don't buy it anymore. Unless it
right.
says, if it says organic, we're cool. But if
right.
it doesn't say organic, then it's most likely GMO.
Right. So when those sugar beets were being bred, they were, whether strategically or just keeping their own isolation for whatever reason, they were patched work all throughout our county. So it enabled, you know, no other farmer really knew where they were growing. And so we weren't able to grow any of that family seed anymore, which this area is really known for.
And what are the seeds in the same family with the sugar beets?
So, well, obviously table beets, chard, Swiss chard. So we weren't able to keep, you know, contracts for those without taking a really high risk. Those are a two-year crop to grow out. So as a farmer, you'd have to decide, do I want to take a risk and use my land, my resources, and take the risk of this crop being contaminated, and, you know, if it is, I won't be able to legally sell it because there's patent laws, so you wouldn't legally be able to sell your seed. And then on top of it, customers, that's not what they were, you know, planning on buying. Well, you can't even sell it anyways, right? So it's patented.
Right.
So, yeah.
But the other part of it is that if you're selling to organic seed companies, they're not going to want to take the risk of selling seeds that might be contaminated with GMOs.
Of course, yeah. Not even organic, even traditional. So because it would be illegal for them to even sell those seeds.
And then there's a lot of consumers who probably don't want to buy GMO seeds.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so it really limits the market. And, you know, as a farmer, so I have a farm with my husband here in Jackson County, and we look at down the pipeline of all the crops that are, you know, soon to be, Roundup ready. It makes us very nervous of, you know, right now we're not able to grow, you know, corn safely or alfalfa or anything in the, you know, the beta family with beets and, you know, zucchini. And so you start looking at, like, well, what's going to happen a decade from now? What will I not be able to grow? And so that's a little bit scary, obviously.
Actually, I've talked to a number of farmers around the state who are very concerned about the kind of explosion of GMO crops. And mm-hmm. the big concern is contamination.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked with one farmer outside of Forest Grove who was saying, well, it didn't really affect them. And we were talking actually about last summer or two summers ago when the GMO wheat scare happened in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And she was saying, well, the big chemical biotech companies don't really care about, they care about making a lot of money and having, you know, a huge amount selling a huge amount of seeds. So they're not going to be interested in bioengineering the kinds of things that they grow on their farm. And mm-hmm. so she mentioned, she was talking about rhubarb and a couple other things. And then she said, I have to stop here because I hear that they're coming out with GMO potatoes and tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, now the apple is a big thing.
Right.
And she had this rather kind of lost look on her face as she was saying that, like suddenly she's realizing the implications of what you're just saying.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and we actually had a wheat farmer here in our county that lost his entire crop of wheat because of the threat in eastern Oregon. So it really does, you know, affect every farmer in the long run. And even if you are, you know, his crop was not contaminated clearly, but he still lost his, you know, $60,000 sale for the year because by the time they opened back up to buying internationally, his crop was ruined. So, you know, those kinds of things do happen all the time. Especially in the international market. So we take it really seriously, and, you know, we fought really hard to protect our farms, and now, like you said, the chemical companies are backing this lawsuit and trying to overturn the Democratic vote, and so we're now in the middle of a lawsuit.
So before we get into the lawsuit, I just wanted to get a sense of how much that ordinance changed the agricultural landscape. Did people, was there a ban? Is the ban still in place until the lawsuit's determined, or has there been an injunction on the ban?
No, there's been no injunction. We had a year grow out period. So it's in effect on June 6th of this year.
So June 6th, you will be a GMO-free county.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. Does this include a ban on all GMO crops, or are there any kinds of exceptions?
No, all GMO crops.
And overall, would you say that the residents of Jackson County are jubilant about this, or are there people who are feeling that their rights are being infringed upon?
Oh, no, people are very, very supportive. I mean, that's how, you know, you can see by the voting turnout, and we won by 66%. And I believe, actually, it would have even been higher if people really understood, you know, how it worked. There was a lot of confusing ads. I know quite a few people who voted against it thinking they were voting for it. So, because it was, you know, a yes on no GMOs. So that's always a difficult vote to get. So
that's a problem across the board with ballot initiatives.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're spun that way. But I don't think since you were involved with writing the initiative, I take it, right?
No, I wasn't actually. I came on, so I basically was part of our Family Farms Coalition, who joined forces with GMO Free Jackson County, who was part of writing the ordinance and the initiative. So,
now, just on the aside, Josephine County also passed a ban, but they weren't included in that exemption that was passed, the Monsanto Protection Act that Governor Kitzhaber signed right before the election last year, or actually a little while before the election, mm-hmm. that basically exempted you from the prohibiting local ordinances from passing anti-GMO ordinances. So is Josephine County's ordinance been able to go into effect?
they're moving forward. I mean, that's what the people voted and what the people want. So I'm really proud of them for doing that and for stepping forth and protecting their farms.
And I see that Benton County is also going forward with an initiative that they couldn't get on the ballot a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's. I think people are just really realizing that they need to step up and protect, you know, where their food comes from and their farms, so that they have a future in food that they want to eat.
So I'm curious, in the case of Benton County and Josephine County, the state could come in at some point and override their initiative. Is that true?
I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know.
Maybe I don't know why the state passed that. I mean, it was part of the grand bargain of getting schools funded that Kitsopper put that, cobbled that together.
Right.
And I don't know now with a new governor if that atmosphere is going to change. It's like a lot of things are up in the air.
Yes, they are.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Elise Higley, who is the owner or co-owner of Oshala Farm in the Applegate Valley in Southern Oregon, and she's director of Our Family Farms Coalition. And we're talking this morning about a ballot initiative that passed last year to ban GMO crops in Jackson County that's now being litigated by the very challengers of that initiative in the first place. So let's talk about this lawsuit and how is it, well, how did it come to be?
Well, it came through the chemical companies backing two alfalfa farmers that were growing GMOs in our county, or that are, and claimed that it violates the Right to Farm Act, which, I mean, as a farmer, to me is completely ridiculous, because that's exactly what this ordinance does. Is the same thing as what the Right to Farm Act does, is it protects farms. And so, you know, they're both in line with each other. So I feel, you know, really confident about that.
Well, let's get back. This alfalfa farmer wants to grow GMO alfalfa, which is one of the few crops right now that's legal, that's been approved for commercial farming. That's correct.
Right.
So if he can't grow GMO alfalfa in Jackson County because it's going to be banned as of June 6th, then isn't his right to farm as he wants being violated?
So the way the Right to Farm Act reads is it's reasonable and prudent farming, and I definitely don't believe that, you know, it's reasonable or prudent farming to plant a crop that can ruin your neighbor's farm.
That sounds reasonable to me. So what is so how does he argue, and what's his rationale for saying that his rights are being violated?
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. We have our hearing on May 20th. And so right now we're just in the midst of depositions and all of those good things.
Now, I understand that one of the big issues for you was getting standing so that you could, along with the county, argue in support of the initiative. Is that correct?
Right.
So what does that mean? So why was there a question ever that you weren't going to get standing?
We had to file for intervention, and the court had to decide whether we could help defend the case or not with the county, because the county is actually the one being sued. And so we were really happy with that decision, that we were able to intervene along with Center for Food Safety, our farm personally, Oshala Farm, Chris Hardy with My Village Farm, and then Our Family Farms Coalition. And all because, you know, we have been doing this kind of work and we know firsthand how it affects us as farmers. And so we feel good that at least we're able to be part of that. So,
well, I'm curious, if you hadn't gotten intervener status in this lawsuit, do you think that the county would have put together a meaningful support for the ordinance, or do you think they would have just caved?
You know, I think that they're doing actually a really good job, their council. I don't think we have the support through all of the county representatives, but the council is definitely doing a great job. And but the reason we were able to intervene and that was accepted is because, you know, luckily for us, we're dealing with people who are expertise in this GMO issue, and so that's not really their expertise. So I think they're very grateful to be able to have us be able to defend the county and you know, have the time and the resources and, you know, working with people like Center for Food Safety, who, you know, this is what they do.
So Center for Food Safety is a national organization.
Yes.
So that's interesting. So you have the county, which is the legal body that's responsible in the eyes of the law for the initiative, for the ordinance, and then farms and farmers who supported and worked to get the ordinance passed, and whose livelihood depends on the ordinance remaining intact. And so that's on one side. And then on top of that, you have national organization. Now, on the other side, who are the what do you call them? The litigants.
Plaintiffs.
Plaintiffs, right.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the plaintiffs who are opposing the ordinance?
I don't feel comfortable saying their names.
No, I don't need their names, but I mean,
Who's backing it financially, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm curious is Syngenta, who we can say their name, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I actually don't know if that is. I know Monsanto and Bayer are part of that. The biggest chemical companies are backing it, so they're being backed by big vendors.
But they're not actual plaintiffs. The plaintiff is this local farmer.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which is the same, you know, as the campaign went. They're giving a face of a farmer so that you can try and relate to it more.
So I'm kind of curious about the dynamics and how that plays out in your county. Do people, I'm sure some people know this farmer and and he has friends, and there may be, I'm sure there's people that support what he's doing. And then there's other farmers. He's not the only GMO alfalfa farmer in Jackson County, I would imagine.
So there's actually two.
Only two, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And they are the only two that I know of.
Uh-huh. Now, are the sugar beet people, are they also supporting the lawsuit?
You know, I don't know financially if they're supporting the lawsuit. My guess is that they would like, all I know is, I guess what I do know is that any sugar beet plot that I had seen before is all up and out of here. Huh. This county. So I think they, stepped out with the idea that they knew that that wasn't wanted in our county. And so they've moved on.
And is there GMO corn being grown in Jackson County?
Not that I know of.
Oh, that's interesting. Because actually I learned there's a lot of GMO corn. It's corn, it's the field corn. It's not sweet corn, but corn for feedstock. And it's being grown in Washington County. A lot, like majority of the feed corn now is GMO. So it's, I think that there's more GMOs in Oregon than we're aware of, even though relatively speaking, we're a GMO-free region.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely not common in our county. We have 150 plus farmers that have signed on in support of the measure. I didn't even see, actually, when we were working with the campaign, there were even any local farms that actually signed on in support publicly. So that just kind of gave you an idea of the agricultural picture here in Jackson County, that, you know, the vast majority of people are not growing GMOs. And so we actually didn't know, really, until very end of the campaign, that there were actually anybody even growing GMOs besides Syngenta.
Well, I saw stuff during the campaign in some mainstream media where they were portraying the proponents of the GMO ban as these hippie organic farmers.
Right.
And they're all from California, and they haven't lived in Jackson County very long.
Right, right.
And then the people, the real farmers, the real people who've been in Jackson County for generations, they support growing GMOs. They all want to grow GMOs.
Right.
So how did that, and that unfortunately was a picture that was painted. I saw that probably in like a nationally distributed piece.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a common assumption. And I wonder how that jibes with what was really happening on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's the beauty of working on a local measure, is that, you know, no matter how much is paid for advertising and what's said in newsprint or in ads, you know, when people really know you and they know where they buy their food and they trust the farmer that's growing them, that's how they're going to vote. So people knew that that wasn't the case. And you could just, by, you know, what was going on as far as public talks and, events that we had to talk about the pros and cons of the measure, there was nobody local coming forth and supporting the measure. Every time we had any kind of educational, talk about the effects of the measure, they actually had to fly people in to talk about it because there was nobody local to talk about it. So it just, you know, it was pretty apparent that this was, you know, outside chemical company money who was trying to support the measure and not the local farmers.
So, and is it true that there's a lot of California hippies who've moved up to the Applegate Valley and some of the other farmland in Jackson County who are the most vocal anti-GMO people? Or
I really wouldn't say that, no.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed kind of, I know people that have been farming in in the Applegate Valley for, I mean, for 30 years.
Right. I mean, the majority of people on our campaign and supporters of the measure have been in business, you know, for decades. So.
I mean, they might have been hippies back in the 70s.
Right. Could have been the Back-to-Landers. Judging them for why they came. But
right, but I think that they're pretty rooted in the community now.
Definitely. Oh, definitely.
Now, the other thing that's interesting, and this really came out during the GMO wheat scare, that it was very obviously an issue far beyond the organic farming community.
Right.
And you mentioned the wheat farmer down your way who lost his entire harvest. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, and in this film that my partner and I are doing about sustainable food, we've been spending a lot of time on this farm in Tangent. That's a grass seed and commodity wheat farm that's converting to organic grain, but mm-hmm. they still are dependent on selling commodities to mm-hmm. support the organic side, or at least it's been that way up until recently. And he has 800 acres in soft white wheat that he exports to China. And it was a freak out when...
Yeah.
And it was interesting. The organic part of the farm was not affected, though they wind up having to test for GMOs for all the grain, all their seed uh-huh. stock.
Right.
But they were on tenterhooks for that whole summer. And he didn't lose his whole harvest, but he lost a lot of money because the price mm-hmm. of wheat dropped. So I got a sense of... and his neighbors were in the same boat they were. So it seemed like that whole scare made a lot of people... kind of realize what a threat GMO was, because even though it's not as big an issue in this country in terms of contamination for U.S. markets, it's a big deal when you're exporting to any place else in the world.
Exactly. No, it's a big deal in this country. I mean, there's billions of dollars lost every year by farmers who are selling internationally. So it's a big deal.
So are you finding with the farmers down your way who are conventional farmers and grow for export markets that they are as concerned about GMO contamination as the organic farmers and the seed specialists?
Yes, most definitely, yeah. We have a farmer that our neighboring farm has been growing for 5 generations corn and, you know, sweet corn, and he's very concerned because, you know, they save their seed, and while they grow conventional, they don't grow GMOs, and so that could, you know, that's how he keeps his land and his livelihood, and he's very concerned about it.
So is he concerned more because if he were to save his seed and it was contaminated, he'd owe Monsanto a lot of money, or is he concerned because he doesn't want to grow GMO?
He's concerned because he would be breaking the law if he saved that seed.
So it's interesting. So that's now, if he weren't breaking the law, if there weren't the whole thing about intellectual property rights for GMO seeds, do you think he would still be as opposed to GMO seeds?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I tend to think not. I think it's more for him an economical decision than just, you know, he's a farmer. He doesn't want to be a criminal. You know.
So it seems like this is a whole other thing that gets tied in. It gets all kind of convoluted in here because I think people in cities are opposed to GMOs partly for health reasons, and I think for a lot of people it's not that they are convinced that GMOs are bad for you, bad for us, but just we don't know enough, and so mm-hmm. that's a concern. And then there's other people that just don't like the idea of large chemical companies owning the rights to all their food, all the seeds in mm-hmm. the world, and so it's kind of a political stand. But it's a really, I don't think that many people in the city understand the whole issue with the property right, intellectual property rights, and that you break right. the law if you save your seed.
Right.
I mean, I've seen the film Food Inc. It's pretty well portrayed there. Mm-hmm. But I still think that that's new information. So I wonder, how do you explain to city people, you know, what this means when you can't save your seed anymore?
Well, luckily, there's not a lot of big cities for us in Jackson County. So, and people,
but you're talking to a big city audience here, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's all about being, you know, being connected and knowing who grows your food and how it affects them. And so if you are, if you're wanting to support farmers being able to save their seed like they have for generations and since time began, like the gift of God or nature or whatever you believe, you know, I don't feel like any chemical company should be able to take that right away from me. And so that's what, you know, I'm really fighting for. And all these other farmers are fighting for their right to be able to save their seed and to be able to grow food that is not contaminated by genetically engineered pollen. And so we're just asking, you know, for your support and to really look at where your food comes and get to know your farmer. And if you, you know, find out who you want to be growing your food.
I think it's another interesting thing is when you look at what they are breeding GMO crops for, it's things that you really wonder if you want to put in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, with corn, a lot of the corn has this pesticide. It's organic pesticide, BT.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I don't know that it's something you really want to eat.
Right.
And then there's the apple that's just got approved. It doesn't turn brown.
Yeah.
And then there's a GMO potato that also doesn't decompose. And so you're like wondering, what is that going to do in my body if it doesn't decompose? So is that something that...
Or at least have the right to know if you want to eat it and have it labeled.
Right. But I'm just wondering, is that something that's being talked about? Like, well, why would we want to eat food that has these qualities that it's being bred for?
Right. I mean, I think a lot of people are talking about that. You know, that is not the focus of our ordinance. The focus of our ordinance is to protect the farmers against contamination, and the only way you can do that is to really ban it. I mean, science shows that contamination is going to happen, and we here in Jackson County are also in a unique geographical layout. We have windy, narrow valleys, and so it's virtually impossible to not be contaminated. And there are, you know, smaller plots. And so, you know, that's why we really said the only way to solve this solution is to ban those crops. And we talked about what that meant and how that affected the farmers here, and that's how the people voted. So right now, we're looking for financial support to pay for our legal fees. So if anyone feels compelled to help us out on that end, we would really appreciate it. Our website is ourfamilyfarmscoalition.org, and are doing everything we can. We have a lot of pro bono work, but we also need to pay them something.
And we have a link to your website on our website.
Yeah, thank you so
much.
Show.
Yeah. So if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with Elise Higley, who's owner of Oshala Farm in the Applegate Valley, director of Our Family Farms Coalition, working right now to uphold in court an initiative that was passed last spring that bans GMO crops in Jackson County. And for those of you who don't know where Jackson County is, it's Southern Oregon County, adjacent to the California border, famous for the towns of Medford and Ashland. And in farm circles, equally famous for the Applegate Valley, which is probably one of the most fertile valleys in Southern Oregon. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think so.
And a very beautiful place to boot.
Yeah, thank you.
So in the remaining time, I want to talk about what your expectations are for this lawsuit. Like, kind of what is the feeling right now amongst the farmers in Jackson County? How are you gearing up to defend your ordinance? And what do you think are some of the charges that are going to be coming at you?
You know, it's all about the right to farm law. So, you know, we talked about that a little bit earlier, and the right to farm law was, you know, brought about to protect farms against, you know, common or reasonable and prudent farming practices. And so we feel like we have the law on our side. We feel like that GMOs are not prudent, responsible farming, and are definitely not common in Jackson County. So we feel that, you know, as long as, you know, the law prevails, then that's good. It's definitely, you know, daunting to be, again, fighting with the biggest chemical companies in the world. And we know that they have, you know, endless pockets to keep us in legal battles. So that's a little bit frustrating, because currently right now, because of this lawsuit and we don't know what's happening, you know, most of us are not able to take that financial risk to grow the crops that are at risk of contamination. So it puts, you know, all those crops and potential money being lost to all the traditional farmers not growing GMOs.
Now, if you're not growing crops that can be cross-pollinated with sugar beets, GMO sugar beets, what can you grow?
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got corn as an issue, alfalfa, right?
These are all the ones that you don't want to grow because they might be
contaminated. We grow GMO-free sweet corn seed this year, but we don't grow as much as we could because we also realize that, you know, we're taking a little bit of a risk, and if it ends up being contaminated, we won't be able to sell any of it. So there's only so much you can do. You know, you have to be a prudent business person when you have a farm, And so we have to make, you know, economically good decisions for ourselves and not risk the whole farm.
Are you getting your seeds tested?
Yes, we'll have to get them tested before we sell them.
And actually, I learned last year from Stafford Seed Farms in Tangent, because they were testing all their organic wheat, that they did the first round of tests and everything came out clean. And then they found out, Monsanto kind of let it slip, that there are some other markers that they hadn't let people know about. Mm. And they had to go through and do more expensive tests. And I'm wondering if you're encountering anything like that.
Yeah, have not yet. Hopefully not.
Because that's one of the other things that was very unnerving, is that there's so little, because it's all proprietary information. Mm-hmm. And intellectual property rights and trade secrets and all those things, that Monsanto and Syngenta and Dow and Bayer have kind of gotten away without disclosing things that would be, you would think, in the public interest.
Right. And frustrating, too, that when you're not the person growing them, that you actually have to test your crop and spend the money and the risk of losing everything because of being contaminated by somebody else's decision.
Now, you don't have any standing, or are there any grounds for you to sue your neighbors if you were contaminated?
Sure, you could, but you're going to be fighting the, you know, again, on your own, these big chemical companies. And so it's, you know, a pretty daunting process. So we've decided in our county, just to overall, to protect everybody, to just have the ban in place.
So let's have a couple different scenarios. So let's say the... if the lawsuit, if you prevail in the lawsuit, will it be appealed to the state Supreme Court and to the U.S. Supreme Court, do you think?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. You know, you would hope not, but you never know with who we're dealing with, right?
Right. I mean, is that something that's been on your contingency plans?
Yeah, I try not to think about it, but yeah.
it's like that earthquake that's going to hit us, the 9.0 earthquake. Better not think about it.
Yeah. I would just like to get back to farming. This is like the worst time of year to be dealing with the lawsuit as a farmer.
Right. So what's,
you know, right in spring here.
What's the timeline on the lawsuit?
May 20th is our hearing.
And then what happens after that?
Well, hopefully we win and it gets shown that the democratic, you know, process of voting and the people's vote actually counts. And, you know, everything is in favor of the farmers growing traditional crops, and we get to grow our crops without fear of contamination, which is the goal.
So if you lose, what happens then? Do you appeal?
Exactly. Then we have to raise more money. So, yeah, so we're hoping, you know, for the positive side of it.
Well, I hope that this all works out in your best interest.
Yeah, thank you.
What do you think? I mean, I'm just looking at the other counties that are thinking about going ahead. I mean, there's no lawsuit in Josephine County, is there?
No.
Interesting. Is much specialty seed crops being grown in Josephine County as in Jackson County?
I believe so, yeah.
And then I'm just curious about what's going to happen with Benton County. I know some of the people involved in Benton County, and they're very highly charged, energetic warriors, I guess you could call them.
Yeah.
But I mean, they ran into some issues with the county. They couldn't even get it on the ballot last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you're tracking that at all, and if they're dealing with they had to do one issue was that they had was seen by the county having two different subjects in the same ballot initiative, which goes against Oregon law.
Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't, and I feel bad for not following it a little bit more. You know, I have a farm, and I'm not really a politician, you know, and I just kind of do this because, you know, obviously I care about the future of agriculture in our county and everywhere, and I'm definitely supportive of Benton County or any other county that is trying to support protecting their farms. I think it's a huge issue, and, you know, I'm supportive of anyone who's trying to do that.
So what are you saying? What kind of conversations are you having with your neighbors right now?
You know, everyone's just kind of in awe that this would even be happening, because it's like, didn't we vote on this? Like, people are just kind of really surprised. When we have, we started talking a little bit and giving some presentations because we thought, well, we better make sure people know what's happening. And people are just mostly shocked that, you know, that they would try and overturn the vote like this. And yeah, I think just it's kind of the same thing, the same feeling that came in when all the money poured in. It's like, wait, are you kidding? Like, what's happening here? So But people have been supportive and helping raise monies, and we're just getting a Kickstarter together in the next couple weeks. So we'll hope to get some outside financial resources from that as well. And we're just all, you know, we're just all trying to move forward on our farms at the same time. So it's definitely a challenging time.
I wonder if you can get any money from some of the groups that gave a lot of money to the labeling campaign, the statewide labeling campaign.
Yeah.
There's some deep pockets there.
So. Yeah, we're trying for that, although, you know, they've already been so gracious, and so it's hard to, you know, keep asking the same people.
Right.
So.
Well, that's actually one of the concerns I heard from people, activists in Benton County, was that they felt that the labeling, statewide labeling initiative, took a lot of resources out of their pockets for them to get their anti-GMO growing ordinance in Benton County. So I'm wondering if you're seeing that there's kind of conflicts, if there's any way that we can sort of surmount these conflicts between labeling campaigns and the kind of anti-GMO crop campaigns that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is this affects everybody who puts food in their mouth. And so if all of us can step up and just even, you know, donate $10 to some, you know, something that comes up that we know is for a cause that we believe in, that we can make this happen. And so I really believe that, you know, if we all come together and just give a little bit, that we can make it happen. So
what would you like to hear? What would you like to get from people or in the Portland area and everybody who's listening? What would help you in your struggle to rid the planet of GMOs?
Well, we would really appreciate some financial support to help pay for the lawyers. And, you know, in return, we hope to be to set a precedent for other counties and to be a good example and to provide you to some really great food, because we do grow food and it goes up to Portland. So,
well, great.
Actually, quite a few of our farms.
Well, it's really good to talk with you, Elise, and
yeah,
I wish you well.
You.
And we'll stay in touch about what happens. So let me know after the hearing what the decision is, if it doesn't make it into the newspapers up here.
Yeah, I hope it will.
Okay. Well, thanks a whole lot.
All right. Well, ironically, it is a year from the date, May 20th. So
maybe it's good. It's good juju.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you so
much.
Thanks,
Elise.
Appreciate your time. Bye-bye.
We've been talking with Elise Higley, who's owner of Oshala Farm in the Applegate Valley and director of Our Family Farms Coalition. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed or you want your family or friends to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll talk with Rolf Scar, who's with Greenpeace, who actually used to work with the Siskiyou Project down in Southern Oregon. And we'll be talking about reforestation of tropical and temperate rainforests. My engineer is Kate Welch. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Rye Cooter. Thanks for listening.
Through summer and through fall, but the mortgage worked the hardest and the steadiest of us all. It worked on nights and Sunday, it worked each holiday, settled down among us, and it never went away. The farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down. The farmer
Tune into KBOO every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D. Hard Knock Radio features in-depth interviews and profiles with community leaders, activists, hip-hop artists, and musicians, giving voice to community concerns and offering a unique forum to explore issues relevant to hip-hop community. That's every weekday at 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yes, it is 11 a.m. on KBOO Portland. That child got it right. And coming right up, we are standing by for Disability Awareness. This is a monthly show about issues affecting people with disabilities. And the host is Grace Eagle Reed. She has a guest in the studio today. I'll let her tell you all about her guest. And then at 11:30, it's an Oregon Community Media publication. It's a collaboration between community radio and other independent media with host Erin Yankee. On today's edition, we focus on Mary.